This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. How long do you have to wait for so-called elective surgeries that are crucial for a Zoomer's quality of life? I'm talking about hip replacements, knee replacements, and cataract surgery. The Canadian Institute of Health Information has crunched the numbers, and wait times are going up. On the positive side, I suppose this is happening as more people are receiving these life-altering procedures. So, for knee and hip replacements, the benchmark is 6 months. Now, across the country, less than 70% of patients got their new knees in that time frame. 2 years ago, 82% of patients did. So, that's a pretty big jump. And one interesting statistic that I haven't quite figured out is that in Ontario, for all three of those procedures, about half of patients got their operations in half the recommended time, and the rest had to wait much longer. Now, it's hard to wrap your head around these numbers on radio, especially the way they have been expressed in this study. So we'll go over them and we'll parse them. And we want to hear from you about how long you are waiting or have waited for these procedures. The numbers to call 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. Right now, we are going to Dr. Sean Whatley from the Ontario Medical Association. Hi, Sean, how are you?
Hi, Libby. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, well, the issue of a wait time for I forget which of these surgeries, that's the subject of one of your big ads.
Absolutely. We, in fact, our campaign is called Not a Second Longer, and it's a call to every party, anyone who's running to get elected this June. We've asked them to pay attention to the wait times in their own riding. And so we wrap our campaign with a leaflet for Kathleen Wynne, and we say, did you know patients in your riding wait 232 days for cataract surgery? And we say patients shouldn't have to wait not a second longer. And so we want everybody who's running for provincial parliament to make healthcare an issue and say, we need to fix these wait times. We have ideas. Let's find solutions to prevent patient suffering.
Okay, so because it is very hard to wrap your head around the way these are expressed. So let's take cataract surgery in Ontario. The benchmark, which is the government says you should get your surgery within this time frame, is 112 days, which is it's like 3.5 months. Half patients get their surgery in about half of that, get their surgery within 67 days, so which is pretty good, and 90% get it within 229 days, which is bad. So, Sean, do you have a handle on why that is? Does it have to do with the patient's location or something like that?
Well, the issue of distribution for health services in Ontario has been a big problem for years. The worry whenever I start talking about this or someone starts asking questions about it is that our politicians who are listening might say, oh, we can fix that. Let us come in and create some rigid solutions. So we do have a problem with distribution, whether it's rural, urban, northern, southern. I know in Strathroy, the wait for a hip replacement reported just last year, I believe, was 671 days, whereas hip replacement in the CIHI report, on average over the whole of Ontario, is now closer to 242 days in 2017.
That's not the average. That's 90% get
correct.
Their surgery within that amount of time, but 50% half of people get their surgery within 82 days.
Absolutely. And I say this to my patients all the time. I say, you know, if you're retired and you've got a spouse or you've got the means to travel around the province, you can get your hip replaced faster. But what kind of insurance system is that when we say, listen, can you travel 3-4 hours or farther? Maybe you'll find a shorter wait time somewhere else in the province. The challenge with that as well is that there's post-operative care, follow-up, complications. You want surgery to be done as close to home as possible. Patients shouldn't have to shop around the province.
Well, yes and no, I say, because I believe, and it's mandated for certain kinds of surgery, I want to get my surgery in a place and from a doctor that does a lot of that particular type of surgery. If I live in a rural area, I don't want to go to a doctor who sees maybe two of those a year. It's been proven that it's safer to do it that way. Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. And you make a great point there, Libby. I'm talking about a few hours traveling across the Golden Horseshoe. I'm not suggesting that we should be doing complex surgeries in tiny little hospitals where they only do one or two of them a year. So we have many large hospitals that have high volume procedure rates and excellent, excellent surgeons, but their wait times are much higher because those hospitals are under-resourced. And so that's an issue that we can talk about.
Okay. Well, there's another issue, and I first came to understand this when I was on a patient committee, actually, for cancer treatment for pancreatic cancer. So one of the issues is that it's centralized waiting lists. So let me explain. One of the things is that every surgeon, and I believe that's the case in Ontario, because except for a few places, we do not have what's called centralized wait lists. Every surgeon has his or her own wait list. And surgeons, they like to keep their own wait lists. They can be holdouts. And that holds things up where if you have a centralized wait list and you say, I'm going to get my hip replacement from the next hip replacement doctor that comes available, it would come a lot faster.
So that is a beautiful, we could have a whole show on this, and I'm glad you raised that, Libby. You know, the funny thing is, when my patients say, I need a particular procedure, I say, great. And they say, who would you recommend? I say, well, there's this surgeon and that surgeon. I know them both well. I know their post-operative. I know their bedside manner. I know how they are technically. I've actually worked with them in the operating room, but their wait times are very long. I say, however, there's another surgeon somewhere over here with who I don't know, and they say, well, are they a good surgeon? I said, well, I imagine they are, but all I can really tell you is they have a very short wait list. So I think wait times are only one measure of quality. I think they're a measure of service. The reason I worry about a centralized, one-size-fits-all system is now I have no way to hold my specialists to account. If they give lousy service or they are rude or not nice, yeah, so what if they have shorter wait times? But if they're not giving the care that I expect for my patients, I don't want to send my patients to them. So it's a little more nuanced than simply saying there's a number that we have to beat.
Well, yes and no, but in those cases and in places where they have these wait lists, and you would hope that any surgeon who is allowed to perform these procedures is pretty good at it. Maybe they're a little newer or something, but that if the patient chooses, and I know, I mean, I'm the same way. I want, you know, the stamp of approval. And if you told me to go to Dr. Joe, I might decide I'm going to wait another 3 months to see Dr. Joe, but then you might decide, hey, I mean, I've heard equally stories from people saying, you know, I went to this doctor, wherever it was, that I heard had room, and he or she did a great job.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not trying to second-guess the technical expertise of anyone here. I think we have great, great surgeons and physicians in Ontario. My issue is, how well do they communicate back with primary care? How available are they to deal with questions postoperatively? Do their patients actually fully understand what's going on? So everybody has a little different approach. Even if you start looking at language and culture, does this particular surgeon, do they speak another language that can actually be useful for my particular patient?
I'm going to get flack for saying this, but you know what? Surgeons are not known for their bedside manner.
Oh, that's terrible, Libby. How could you say that?
Well, it's the personality. I mean, and a lot of them have, you know, nurse, navigator type people.
There are a lot of nice surgeons.
There are a lot of nice surgeons. I apologize to every surgeon. I didn't mean that. But you know, there's a certain stereotype, right? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I hear you. But, you know, and there's really been a focus, certainly on the last 15, 20 years, that your ability to communicate is a core competency. And so certainly I think surgeons are getting better and better, and that old stereotype, I hope, is passing away.
And just to reinforce another stereotype, the women surgeons are a lot better at it. So let's take a couple of calls. We've got Joan in Port Perry. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I want to talk not necessarily about elective surgery, but non-elective surgery, where you've had an accident and you need a shoulder replacement. Urgent cases are seen, perhaps, if they get a CT scan within a month. A non-emergency could wait up to 3 months. I myself am waiting since April the 3rd, and I haven't had a CAT scan yet.
And what happened to you? Was it an accident of some sort?
Yes, I'm vision impaired, and I missed a step and fell.
Oh, no. Sorry to hear that. So
when we talk about the opiate drugs, I can understand now why there is so much addiction, because if I have to stay on these horrible drugs for 3 months, I could see where you could become addicted to them.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, this is, you know, I don't even know what to say. So you're waiting, you have to get a CT scan, and then you'll get a surgery date?
Yes.
Sean, do you have a comment on that?
Well, first of all, I mean, these are the real stories that we need to get this message through to our politicians. It's patients like Joan. I mean, your heart breaks for them, and you're trying to help them. They're in pain. They need a treatment. But Joan also makes a great point, you know, the difference between an acute trauma that requires surgery, whereas another patient who isn't dying or bleeding or, you know, in urgent need, in the same way that you would be in a car accident, they're made to wait much longer. So we do some things quite well in Canadian healthcare, and certainly emergency surgeries, near-death experience. We seem to perform really well, but it's when we think that, oh, that person could wait another few weeks or another few months, those waits just keep creeping up, and it's unconscionable at some point.
Okay, Joan, thanks for sharing your story, and I really hope this clears up for you soon. Thank you. Let's take one more. Bill? Hi, Bill.
Hi. I don't know whether I'm one of the fortunate ones. I live in East York in East General Hospital. But I saw my GP in August, and by February, the middle of February, or the end of February, both my eyes, I had my cataracts done. I was, you know, I mean, basically it was half a year from when I initiated it till it was totally complete, and I was quite happy with the process.
Well, it's actually longer than what's recommended, if it was 6 months. But I guess you probably got the first one done less than 6 months, right?
Well, no, they were both done in February. So they were both basically done. One was done early February, and the other was done later February. I was legally blind. But I guess the outcome was so good, and that's what sticks in my mind. But the one thing about the East General is the wait times in the emergency. I've got a 91-year-old mother that's in and out of there. That's the real problem. I can accept 6 months to get my cataracts done, but being in a hallway for a day or 2 days or whatever, it's unacceptable.
Yep. Thanks for telling us about your story, Bill.
Thanks.
Bye. We are soon going to move on to some positive news that possibly might help with this. Dr. Sean Whatley, what would you like to leave us with?
Well, I think Bill put a great ending on this segment. You know, Canadian patients overall are extremely grateful for the care that they receive. And they know, you know, going blind versus being able to see, hey, I'm thankful for that procedure. And the trouble with that is it can make us complacent and say, look, we're not hearing a major outcry. What's another week on a waiting time? And so we can't get presumptuous or complacent simply because we have thankful, gracious patients. We're here. We can do better. We can provide better service than we're doing.
Okay, Dr. Sean Whatley, thanks so much for that.
Thanks again, Libby.
Okay, you can see all the details on wait times at CIHI is CIHI, the Canadian Institute of Health Information. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about one kind of a replacement procedure that might help with these wait times, and that is making it day surgery. So we're going to hear about some innovative things and some good news when we return.
Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Now, we've been talking about surgical wait times, and one of the reasons for long surgical wait times is a shortage of hospital beds, not necessarily a shortage of OR time. So Women's College Hospital is an ambulatory hospital, and it's pioneering an innovative response to the problem with knee replacements that are performed as day surgery. That's right. You wake up, take a walk, and go home. It's not for everyone, but here to tell us more, Dr. David Urbach, who is the Surgeon in Chief at Women's College. Hello, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell me about this surgery. I gather it's only for people who are fit and active, correct?
That's right. Not every patient who gets a knee replacement is going to be able to go home on the same day, but we do estimate that at least a third of patients, probably up to a half, would be able to be discharged on a day surgery basis. Obviously, you need to have someone at home who can help you look after yourself for the first few days after surgery, and you have to be in reasonably good health.
So how long does the surgery itself take?
The surgery itself takes about 45 minutes or so. And the surgery that we do is no different from the surgery that's done everywhere for knee replacement. It's really quite a standardized operation. What's different is the approach we take to patient care as well as the anesthesia that's given to the patients so they recover much faster.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to me that for all kinds of procedures now, the standard way of dealing with it, it used to be they'd let you lollygag around, but now the caregivers, the healthcare professionals want you out of that bed and walking around as fast as possible.
And it's a bit more than that as well. I would say there's something to be said for being in a familiar and comfortable environment. We think what we're doing is actually enhancing the patient experience. We don't think of it as taking away from the experience. We feel we're doing something helpful and useful for people because most people would prefer to be at home if they could be at home.
Mm-hmm. And again, you answered one of my questions, which was that the procedure is then exactly the same?
It's identical.
Okay. And is the rehab then must be, is it the same or different once if you're going home that fast?
It's exactly the same. So typically now patients will stay in hospital between 2 or 3 days on average after a knee replacement surgery. After those 48 or 72 hours, they're home anyways. Then they'll get their own outpatient physiotherapy as appropriate. So what we're trying to do is just shave a few more days off the length of stay and really make us independent of hospital beds because, as you mentioned, hospital beds are often the limiting factor that makes it difficult for us to access operating rooms.
And have you or anyone else done any calculations, say, if this way of dealing with it was to become standard for, you know, whatever percentage of patients fit the bill, how long could that cut wait times by?
Well, it's it all depends on how much we're able to do on a day surgery basis. But just to put it in perspective, what we would look for is for the provinces to try and reinvest all the extra dollars that they've put into joint replacement surgery. If we can do it more cheaply per case for the same amount of money overall, we're hoping we could fund a lot more cases that could be done. Depending on the proportion, it's possible that we could really increase the supply of surgeries that could be done, which could really bring wait times down.
And do you see being able to do this with other types of surgery, like a hip replacement?
Exactly. And hip replacement is the next one we're targeting. A knee replacement surgery, I'm not sure if people know, is the most common operation for which people stay in hospital after an elective surgery. It's the number one, and hip is very close to that. So these are big operations. If you go to any hospital and look at a post-operative surgical ward, most of the people you see up there are going to be recovering from elective orthopedic surgery, and that's our idea. We want to leverage this idea. We want to apply it to as many procedures as possible to free up capacity in our system so that we can get as much value as possible from the system that we have.
And this is still in its infancy, I gather.
It's emerging in Canada. This is actually pretty common in the United States, day surgery joint replacement, and it's typically done in private hospitals that are typically owned by the surgeons who perform the procedures. But it hasn't really disseminated in a lot of publicly funded healthcare systems.
Now, I have to ask you a question about the procedure itself. I have to admit I'm interested in this. You know, I've been told that I need a knee replacement. I'm bucking it. I know lots of people who've had hip replacements, and they're good as new. Knee replacements, not so much.
Knee replacements are also very effective operations. These operations don't necessarily last forever, and our surgeons don't like to do them in patients who are too young because there is a likelihood that they may end up with a need for a second replacement, decades down the road. But hip replacement and knee replacement for arthritis are among the most effective operations that we know of in terms of improving people's quality of life.
And with a knee replacement, because as I said, I know lots of people who have had hip replacements and get back into competitive sports. Is that the case with knees?
Yeah, you can. The difference is amazing between people who have pain and are debilitated with difficulty moving. The effect of a knee replacement is quite astonishing.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. Dr. David Urbach, thank you so much for talking about this. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.